Well, greetings, everyone. A number of years ago, I was listening to a man on the radio, and he was asked the question, why do you keep teaching that we don't have to keep the law when it says very clearly in Exodus 20 we should? I want you to turn there with me, Exodus chapter 20. And this man is I guess he's still on the radio, but I haven't heard him for quite a while. But anyway, in Exodus 20, he used this verse, and I was amazed that he would say what he did. But he picked out a couple little things there, and from that he developed his response. Exodus 20, of course, is where the law is given, in addition to Deuteronomy chapter 5. But I want you to notice in verse 1 it says, Elohim spoke all these words, saying, I am Yahweh, your Elohim, which have brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. He stopped right there. He said, when were you in Egypt? When did you spend time in Egypt? Therefore, this doesn't apply. You've never been there. If you've not been in Egypt, then Exodus 20 has no meaning for you at all. That was his message. Well, at first I was a little shocked, and I got to studying it and looking at it. And I find out that if we take a look at what the Bible talks about, there are two countries that it mentions. One is Egypt, the other is Babylon. And I think you'll find that Babylon is primarily for the Jews, because it's about a spiritual thing, keeping Yahweh's law, keeping Yahweh's commandments, and doing it because we are striving to be like Yahshua. Now, you find that Egypt is a type of the world, and I firmly believe that Egypt is a type that is given to the lost 10 tribes, especially Ephraim. And let's go over to the book of Hosea, and I'll point out a few things. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea. Hosea chapter 11. And here you find something interesting. Hosea chapter 11, verse 1 reads, when Israel was a child, I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. Egypt is the world. You and I were called out of the world. We were called not because we were Jews, necessarily. We may be of the tribes. But he says, I called my son out of Egypt. Now, what is interesting, if you want to go back to the verse that we've been listening to all the past week, Matthew chapter 2, about the birth of Yahshua the Messiah. Yahshua fulfilled everything, and he actually went to Egypt. In chapter 2, notice in verse 12 of Matthew, it says, and being warned of Elohim in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. So the wise men didn't go back the same way they came. And when they were departed, behold, the angel of Yahweh appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise and take the young child and his mother and flee into Egypt. And be thou there until I bring you word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. So he arose and took Mary by night and departed to Egypt. Verse 15 says he was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled, which is spoken of Yahweh by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt have I called my son. Well, that's rather interesting that he talks, even Yahshua was called out of Egypt. When you follow this through and you notice back in the 12th chapter of Genesis, when Abraham was called out of Ur of the Chaldees, in the last verse of chapter 11 and beginning there with chapter 12, that he traveled and went even into Egypt. As a matter of fact, some of the scholars have pointed out that Abraham's trips that he took actually portray the seven feast days that we celebrate even today. So we find that Egypt is a type of the world, and we're all called out of Egypt. But I want to, rather than go into this, and there's many more things we can say about Egypt. In fact, even King Solomon was told not to go down to Egypt. And the kings were told this, that they would not depend upon armaments that they would get from their neighbors to defend themselves, that Yahweh would take care of them. If they would follow him, they wouldn't have to worry about getting a consortium of other nations to help them drive out whoever was attacking them, whether it be the Syrians or Babylonians, whoever it was. But I want you to take a look at another, the other side of the coin, and take a look now at Babylon. Babylon we're a little familiar with. But I want you to start with one of the Psalms, number 137. And this psalm is one that the Jews often think about. You see, the lost 10 tribes became Gentiles. In fact, they represent the Gentiles even today, and most of the people that are probably of the 10 tribes don't even know that they are of Israel. But if you're a believer, then Yahweh says you are spiritual. Spiritually, you're an Israelite. You're following the laws that were given to ancient Israel. But notice here in Psalm 137, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. So here we have the Jews that were taken captive by the Babylonians, taken to Babylon, and they were sitting down by the river. Notice they didn't stand up. It doesn't say they walked with the Babylonians. It says nothing like that. It says they sat down. They refused to do anything that would imply that they were worshiping or trying to follow the Babylonian worship. What is interesting, too, if you follow through the history of the Jews, when the temple was destroyed in the year 70, there were two groups of people that got together. They had no temple, they had no priesthood, and they established a school in Jamnia in Palestine. They also established one over in Babylon. And each one was vying for dominance, trying to be the one that the Jews would cater to and they would be able to influence them. So we have the Palestinian Talmud. We also have the Babylonian Talmud. Which Talmud do you think the Jews follow today? You're right, the Babylonian Talmud, right out of Babylon. A lot of these things they do came from Babylon. In fact, the Bible, Dr. Bullinger says that the Sadducees and Pharisees didn't become of prominence until their return from Babylon. They were there 70 years, went there in 586, and they were there 70 years. And they were there because they didn't keep Yahweh's law. In fact, I want to, I think I missed, I wanted to point this out, but in the last book of the Second Chronicles, we find the reason they went to Babylon was, well, I'll read it here in the Second Chronicles, Chapter 36, and it says, then that escaped from the sword were carried away to Babylon, where they were servants to him, that is to the king of Babylon, and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia. Rather interesting how Yahweh used Babylon to punish the Jews because they were the only ones left there. Israel had already been taken out by the Assyrians. And they were settled down there in places of like Afghanistan and places like that. And finally crossed over the Caucasus Mountains and became known as the Lost Ten Tribes. And they marched over into Europe and from there all around the world. Because they became Gentiles in name and practice and a lot of people don't know who they are. But Yahweh says you won't let one of them get lost. He knows who they are, where they are. Someday he will call them all together. But notice here in verse 21, it says that the reason that they were taken captive by the Babylonians was to fulfill the word of Yahweh by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths. For as long as she lay desolate, she kept the Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. So the Jews were taken to Babylon because they had not kept the sabbatical jubilee years. And yet today you ask the average person about sabbatical jubilee years, they know nothing about it. Henry Ford did. He found out that when he was experimenting with making plastics, that using soybeans and letting the ground lie fallow every 7th year, that the ground actually increased in production. And he was wise to this 7-year sabbatical, but he didn't keep it like he should have, but just the very sequence that he did was beneficial, and he was able to have great soybean crops and make a lot of Fords out of soybeans. Anyway, let's get over here to the chapter 137. You have to get the picture here of what this is. The Babylonians are a arrogant tribe. They actually are right there today in under Saddam Hussein, a place we call Iraq. They're still there in that same area. So here are the Jews. It says, by the rivers of Babylon, the river Kedar, there we sat down. Yes, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. So they brought along their musical instruments, and they didn't play them. They hung them on harps and hung their harps up on the willows and just left them there. Verse 3 says, for they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. You have to understand what they're doing here. The Babylonians are saying to the Jews, you think this Yahweh you worship is so powerful and so strong that he will take care of you. He doesn't do it. Whose captive are you now? You're the captive of Babylon. Our deity is stronger than yours. And then they wanted them to play these songs. Some of the songs, verse 4 says, how shall we sing Yahweh's song in a strange land? So here we have Yahweh's people singing or rebelling and not wanting to sing the songs. In fact, if you want to turn back to these songs that they used to sing, they sang the virtues of Babylon. I mean, of Jerusalem and Zion, like Psalm 46 and 48. And I want you to turn to number 84, if you would. Psalm 84, and keep your thumb here on 137, but I want to point out in Psalm 84, here we have one of the songs that they were to sing, that the Babylonians want them to sing, and they would sit there and scoff and leer at them and say, you Jews, you don't understand that your deity that you worship isn't strong at all. And notice how they would take one song like this one, Psalm 84. How amiable are thy tabernacles, O Yahweh of hosts. And they would say, your amiable tabernacles now are a mud-covered lean-to. That's all you have. You don't have any tents. Verse 2, my soul longeth even fainteth for the courts of Yahweh. My heart and my flesh crieth out for the living El. And they say, what good does it do to cry out for that? Because you don't get any response. Your deity is no good. He just doesn't do anything. And they would ridicule the Jews because of this. And the Jews did not want to sing any of these songs and lead to more ridicule of Yahweh's name. As you continue reading this, it talks about a sparrow has found a house and a nest and so on, and Yahweh takes care of them. And yet the Babylonians would say, but he can't even take care of you. But I notice here is rather an interesting one that I was looking at this morning. And notice verse 10. It says, for a day in the courts is better than 1,000. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my Elohim than to dwell in the tents of wickedness. And they would scoff at that and say, where do you think you are now? You're not in the tents of Yahweh. You're not a doorkeeper. In fact, I've had people take this verse and try to say something like, I would just be glad to be a doorkeeper. I don't have to be a king or a ruler in the kingdom. I was just a doorkeeper. And I've often thought about that. In John chapter 10, Yahshua says, I am the door of the sheep. Isn't it our job to be a doorkeeper, to open the door to other people, to understand Yahshua, to follow his ways, learn of him, and be a king and a priest in the kingdom? So being a doorkeeper actually is a great pleasure, and it's a great task that we have before us, because right now, in a sense, we are doorkeepers. But anyway, these verses you see in these various psalms is what the Babylonians would laugh and ridicule and make fun of the Jews, because their mighty one was not anything at all, because he couldn't even take care of them. But the Jews knew that they were being punished, and they knew that they would have to put up with these things for 70 years. Well, let's continue with this. You notice that this psalm is written with couplets of three, and then three, and three, making up a total of nine. The next one here, it says in verse 4, how shall we sing Yahweh's song in a strange land? And you can see now when you read this verse, that this verse is actually explaining why the Jews even today will not tell you what Yahweh's name is. They will not utter his name, because they feel very strongly that if they tell you that the Heavenly Father's name is Yahweh, that if you were to do something and blaspheme his name, they would be at fault. Because if you hadn't known it, you couldn't blaspheme it. Once you know it, you better handle it with care. So they don't want anybody to know it, and it's difficult to get them to admit what his name is. You might say the name, is his name Yahweh? And I've had Jews say, yes, you're right, but I can't say it, because it's an ineffable name, and nobody knows it for sure, but that's as close as we know, just like you said it. So here we have in verse 5, if I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. Well, over in Psalm 122, it talks about that we should pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And of course, right now, with all the things going on in the Middle East, why, we know that things are not going to get better before they get even worse. Verse 6, if I do not remember you, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, if I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. So here the writer of the psalm is talking about the days before. If this man or whoever wrote the psalm is sitting there and he's thinking how things used to be back there at Babylon, and he's glad now that he's back in Jerusalem. He's back in the Holy Land once more in his home, perhaps, or wherever he is. And he says here in the seventh verse, remember, O Yahweh, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even the foundations thereof. Now he's worried about what is going to happen to Jerusalem in the future. Edom, you know, is Esau, the brother of Jacob, the one that sold his birthright for a mess of pottage, lost his inheritance to Jacob. And notice it says here, raise it to the foundation thereof. And of course, Edom did not help Israel or the Israelites at all when they were in captivity. Verse 8, O daughter of Babylon, who art to be destroyed? Happy shall he be that rewardeth thee as thou hast served us. From verse 8 to the end of the chapter, these are all special cursing verses. In other words, it's a curse that the writer wants Yahweh to put upon Edom and Israel's enemies. And that's what he says here. O daughter of Babylon, you're about to be destroyed. Happy shall he be that rewards you as you have served us. Happy shall he be that taketh and dasheth your little ones against the stones. And that's one thing, you know, that the marauding conquerors do. They take the babies by the feet and sling them against a rock or a pavement, whatever they can, and just kill them. And this is actually a curse that it ends up with. And there are places like this. Not that we're supposed to be doing these things, but it's actually a prayer that Yahweh will do to these people what they have done to the Jews. Well, both Babylon and Egypt are two things we have to be careful of. Babylon, we know, is one of the places where we find many of the deities and the worshiping of pagan idols and so on. Babylon is full of them, but so is Egypt. But Egypt is a type of the world. We have to come out of the world, and we have to walk in the ways of Yahweh. And I hope that as we look at this psalm and think about it, that Psalm 137 reminds us of the beautiful times that are ahead of us, but there's still some problems that we have to go through, and we're not sure exactly what's going to be in our future. The thing is, we have to be following Yahweh's guidance and walk in the footsteps of our Savior, Yahshua the Messiah. May Yahweh